Kiss My SaaS is the podcast for the modern MSP. Together with industry experts, peers, and all-star guests, we're here to tackle the realities of building a future-proof MSP cloud business with no filter. Each episode is packed with real-life stories, insights, and advice to ensure you can do more. So what are you waiting for? Let's get into it. Hey everyone, my name is Craig Weir, and I'm the host of Kiss My SaaS. I'm based in Toronto, and I manage our global cloud portfolio, and through this podcast, the global voice of the MSP. When people think about digital transformation, they usually focus on the technology and the tools that enable change. But that's simply one part of the equation. In this episode, we're discussing the soft skills you need and the relationships you need to build to make your transformation a success. We have two exciting guests today. First, we'll exploring the what, the why, and the when of workplace culture and how it needs to evolve to support your digital transformation goals. And that's with Claire Darley, VP of Global Sales and Channel at Adobe. Then we'll get a little more introspective with Andrea Mullins, our Cloud VP of HR, to look at what we're doing to make sure we stay ahead with our cultural change. Then, as always, we asked our guests for their music recommendations to add to our Spotify playlist. So let's get our first guest in here. Claire, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Craig.
Great to have you. So tell us a bit about yourself, Claire, your role at Adobe, and why this topic maybe is important to you.
Well, I have worked in tech and telco and SaaS for 30 years, dare I say that. I've been at Adobe for seven of them, and I think it's safe to say I have, don't tell anyone, the best job in Adobe. No, really. I get to run worldwide field sales and customer support for digital media. And what that really means and why it's relevant to the conversation today is that pretty much every single human interaction that a digital media customer has with Adobe touches my team. So, this topic of culture is fundamentally important to me.
That's fantastic. And I'm really excited about our chat today. And before we get into the crux of culture, we usually get to start and shake things up a little bit. So I want to ask you three questions to get to know yourself a little bit better and kind of ease our way in. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You paused a bit there. I just want to make sure. All right. Well, here we go. Question number one. What's the first technology that you've ever sold or become comfortable with?
Many years back, my internship and then my first graduate job was working for IBM. I joined directly into a brand new sales business, going into IBM sales school, literally right as I graduated with my business degree. And I joined the services business, the nascent services business then. And I had this new, but probably not very successful service to sell, and it was called SiteView. I know that nobody will have remembered that at all because it was a long time ago. But basically, it was a remote monitoring service for AS400s, and it allowed IT managers to be notified if there was a disruption to service, so power outage or smoke or fire, etc. And I had this really cute little switch box that plugged into my laptop so that I could demo the offering. We didn't sell very many. We did sell a few. We didn't sell very many. But I actually met my husband at one of those pitches. And we've been married for 27 years. So I definitely sold something.
I love it. That's the first time I think it also spurred a whole family connection and a whole life. So that's my favorite answer so far. All right. Listen, question number two. This is the wisdom part of the show. Looking back, what kind of advice would you give to your younger self?
When I was younger, I was ruthlessly ambitious and probably pretty brazen in my desire to sort of compete and progress. But I didn't really know what made me tick then. So I didn't really know what I should progress to. So I was probably just kind of annoying. So my advice to anyone now is, first know yourself. And when I coach anybody now, I use the technique of Ikigai. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's this Japanese model for determining your reason for being.
Wait, let's hold that thought. As Claire says, the Japanese concept of Ikigai defines your reason for being. It urges people to think about four things: what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can be paid for. These things help define your passion, mission, profession, and vocation. The combination of these things is your Ikigai. Mine's continuity announcements on podcasts. What's yours? Back to the show.
What it does is it basically asks you to think about what you're really good at and then what brings you joy. And those two things might not be the same thing, actually. They may be different. And if you can then add in what your company needs, you know, is like the third bubble, you can find that intersection in the middle and find something that's really cool and your purpose. So for me, I'm really good at sales and building relationships. But what brings me joy is seeing businesses and people sort of achieve their full potential. And when you squish those things together, you know, luckily for me in Adobe, this means that I get to do the job that I'm doing. I get to lead this huge $4 billion business, all the human touch points, right the way from business development through sales, through operations and into customer support. And I just think that advice of like, just calm down a bit and actually just know yourself, spend a bit of time on yourself before you go and throw yourself at the world is a really powerful thing.
I love it. I love it. It's the authentic. And for those driving, if you're trying to write down a key guy, do not do that. Just watch it again when you're in the office. Okay. All right. For the third question. And if there was one current technology approach solution set that MSP should be investing in today, what would that be?
Can I talk about solutions? And then I want to talk about something that's just a little bit different around people. So, you know, as we know, the world's changing fast, cloud and digitalization is all around us. You know, and at the same time, individuals and businesses of all sizes are trying to solve the problem of how they stand out from the crowd, either to be an influencer and influence something or to sell more. And they do this by creating memorable experiences. So effectively, experience is the new black. So I'd say that investing in helping businesses to deliver better experiences to their customers is really key. And you can do this by the technology you choose to sell, but it also could be through training your sellers and success teams to speak outside of just the typical IT and procurement relationships and really get into line of businesses like sales and marketing and HR, as really that's really where the change is happening on the front line. And then outside of, you know, thinking about, you know, cloud technology and helping create great experiences, I would just say, and I have to say this, you know, you've got to really take diversity and inclusion seriously. Actually, I usually say inclusion and diversity. That's my kind of vibe. I think if you create an inclusive environment, it is by nature diverse. Bringing different points of view and different backgrounds into your thinking isn't just a nice to have. It's actually a business imperative and it will help your bottom line.
No, I love it. That's a fantastic answer. All right. Well, listen, I think it's great. I'm so excited to have you here. It's going to be a great discussion. So let's get under the hood of culture and its place in the new digital world. As I mentioned in the intro, Claire, we're here to talk about people, skills, and culture more broadly. So let's get to the big one. What's the role of culture in digital transformation in the new digital workforce that we're seeing today?
Well, despite how difficult and challenging the last 2 years have been for us all, it has without question accelerated the adoption of digital practices, distance learning and remote working, all of which have had an impact on our culture. And any kind of transformation, but especially digital transformation, requires an enormous leap of faith. So creating a culture where ideas can come from anywhere within the organization, where we can foster a growth mindset and a can-do attitude is absolutely imperative. But I think the big question for me and the challenge is how can we maintain and keep the culture positive, and can we if we're not all in the same place? And I really want to say yes. I mean, today I'm in the office and it's just amazing to have meetings outside of meetings, you know, just run into people and have a conversation so I can learn things that I wouldn't have done if I was working from home. But it's hard, right? You know, we have to balance, you know, people being in different places and being all over. And, you know, as much as we've done a great job, you know, using Teams and other technology to keep connected, it's been easier to keep things moving than to initiate new projects. So, you know, we've had to get more creative about finding ways to connect with people in different ways, whether that's sending them some great swag or whether it's actually like today we put a breakfast on in the office to try and bring people in and sort of finding moments that sort of really make a difference to people. But I think you do need to try and keep that spirit of innovation, growth mindset going. And we just are finding new channels to connect. And, you know, what I love about this is podcasts and videos have literally gone through the roof, you know, in terms of the way people are connecting to keep in touch now.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think if I were to paraphrase a bit of what you said, it's almost we change how we work based on where we work. in the sense of we were talking last time when you're in your home office and living room, and here we are in your office, and the type of engagements you have versus live versus virtual become very different. And we're digital snoopers, so we're on LinkedIn profile, and we see that you're mentioning that you say a data-driven approach is key, as is having an amazing team. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
I love the expression digital snooper, by the way. I'm going to totally steal that, so thank you.
it's all yours. You got
thanks. I get asked to speak a lot about Adobe's digital transformation, and a key to that success was building something called a data-driven operating model. So this idea of being data-driven is really fundamental to me, because I was part of that transformation, and it's at the heart of our change. But really, truly, any change or transformation comes down to people and processes and technology, as you said earlier. People can make or break the culture. As I think it was Peter Drucker famously said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So you can have all the right tools, you can have all the right processes, but if you haven't found ways to succeed by finding those change agents, those people with the growth mindset, those that can evangelize and over communicate, might not be as successful as you think you are. So it's really finding that. And you know, to your second point, what makes an amazing team for me is having people who really embrace change. Actually, I love it when people challenge the status quo. I just say, think about the last 2.5 years and how much change everyone's gone through. And really what's made a difference is how fast people were able to pivot and work in different ways. And I think that's massive. So we're always looking for people to challenge the status quo wherever they are in the organization. But you have to do that combined with data, because you know, dying on every hill isn't as effective as dying on the hill that's really important. So you know, use data to help you really focus and narrow in the things that you really want to change. And then ultimately it comes down to leadership. So challenge the status quo, use data to decide really where you want to focus, and lead like there's no tomorrow.
Fantastic. And when you talk about leadership, you talk about people, and I would refer to you maybe as a connector of people. And when I think of that, we often think about opportunities first, the pipeline. We don't think about the personal relationships as much as maybe we used to in this new digital world. So can you describe your view on the role of personal relationships and the relationships in general in IT today?
Yeah, you know, I've been selling a long time, and you know, I said I went to IBM sales school all those years ago, and it was always people buy from people. And I think, you know, there is still a real truth in that. You know, I do describe myself as a connector, and I think being a connector is about connecting people with people or people with ideas. And that's never been more important than now. You know, we've just been doing some research with Gartner, who say that customers are almost 70% of the way through their purchase journey before they actually even speak to anyone about the thing that they're thinking of purchasing. So where are they getting their ideas from? You know, they're looking at articles, they're looking at webinars, they're listening to podcasts, they're talking to colleagues or people in their network before they ever come to us. So when they do, what do they need? They really need to know that they've got a trusted relationship. But for me, it's not just somebody who's going to help give them what they think that they need, but also to help them, give them a point of view on the problem they're trying to solve, you know, the options and the outcomes it can drive. And I think that's been a real change, but it's still about, you know, a personal connection, but it's much more about helping them see the art of the possible. And as great as digital is, and I'm a huge digital advocate, nothing can do that better than a human connection. So, you know, for me, relationships still at the heart of it.
Perfect setup for what I want to talk to you next is we like to get a really practical finish to this in the say of what can we give some advice. So maybe give us 2 or 3 practical things that you do to make sure that you have the greatest culture in your organization, and it could be small things, could be large things, but what are maybe 3 practical advice tips you can give to listeners?
Ask questions, and actually pause and ask the question that says, how's it going? And then really, and the really is a really important like counterpoint to whatever people say. It's just gets under the skin and really allows them to open up. And I think being open to that, you know, really, truly trying to find out what's going on is huge. One of the questions I ask frequently, not just in our, you know, quarterly check-ins, but whenever I have meetings with people is, what could I do to make your job better? It's not making your job easier. It's not, getting you promoted, it's like, what could I do so that actually we can create a sort of a feedback loop? And feedback's really powerful in an organization, and I still think people see feedback as a gift that they sometimes don't like the packaging of. You might not like it in the moment, but you've got to make it timely and relevant. So keep asking questions kind of creates that sort of loop. And then I think, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in big organizations and small organizations that just get in the way of people doing a great job. And, you know, as leaders, we're not always able to see some of that stuff firsthand. It could be a process, it could be, you know, the way that we set things up. So, you know, actually activating and creating squads that allow, you know, people across the organization to come together and self-solve is a really powerful thing. They feel empowered, they feel engaged, and we fix a load of stuff along the way.
Fantastic. Well, I think that was an amazing wrap up to the questions we had today. I want to thank you for your insights. I'm sure our listeners are taking notes, hopefully not in the car. And I looked at the role of digital transformation, and your feedback was imperative for today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
As you may or may not know, Ingram Micro Cloud provides training and enablement, support and growth vehicles, solutions, services, and much, much more to solve your IT needs. So what qualifies us to talk about cultural change, soft skills, relationships, and why should you listen? Well, Ingram Micro is going through the same cultural transformation journey. This topic is very real and very current at Ingram Micro Cloud. To share our own insights, we've invited Andrea Mullins, VP of Human Resources at Ingram Micro Cloud, to talk about our people and the skill strategy and how it's evolving to support our own transformation. Have the skills we're looking for changed? Have the personalities? Does a cultural change necessarily require personnel change? These are the type of questions we're going to ask today, so let's get into it. Andrea, I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Before we get into it, tell us a bit more about yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Craig. I'm really happy to be here today. My name is Andrea Mullins. I am the Vice President of Human Resources for Ingram Micro Cloud. I've been on board nearly 4 years, but in human resources, nearly 25, and that's just scary to say. And a lot of people hear human resources, and they always think that that's like the policy police. Interesting thing is I consider myself a bit of a rule breaker, and recently I was with my family at a family gathering, and they think it's hysterical that I'm in human resources because that's all they remember about me growing up is that I love to break all the rules. So I think that's why I love this culture piece, because I couldn't tell you what our policies are, but I could tell you what we're doing to change and evolve, and that's what I'm really, really passionate about.
So this podcast is all about the role of soft skills, building relationships, and the cultural changes that MSPs are going through every single day. Andrea, since you're leading this challenge for us, I know you have a lot of interesting insights on how to tackle this, but in an actionable way. So let's get into it. Let's start big picture. So a lot has changed over the past 2 years, and the issues that were impacted by work, specifically the people, the culture, and the potential values have changed. What's your views on this?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I've thought about this a lot. I think we've all thought about this a lot. Have we really changed, or has the world around us changed and then brought out those opinions? Here's for sure what I've learned about the last 2 years is it has brought out the most polarized opinions on everything. So COVID, for instance, and then after COVID, it was the return to work. And during this whole process, we also had diversity, equity, and inclusion and all of the efforts around that. And that's at the same time that we're having the technology transformation that we're having, which this period of time has sort of prompted. So what I've learned is I'm never, ever going to make everyone happy. Not about whether or not they wear masks in the office, not whether or not they have to be in the office. Not with regard to their comfort level of having their workers work from home. And so, you know, first of all, I've learned to listen, I think, a lot more over the last 2 years. And I think we've all learned to listen quite a lot more because people have had more opinions. And so I think we always were who we are, but we're just a little bit more outspoken, and we've maybe dug deeper a little bit to think about. To your point, you said values. Did I really give a lot of thought to my values and what I held near and dear? before the last 2 years, maybe not so much, but over the last 2 years, I've been challenged in so many ways to really think about what's truly important to me. What do I think about work-life balance? You know, what do I want out of life? I mean, these are the things that people were reflecting on as we were all in our cocoons at home, right? Talking to each other over screens. So I don't think I will ever experience in my career, I certainly hadn't for the 23 years preceding, I don't think I'll ever experience another period of time where things have changed so rapidly. And we, if we're in leadership positions, if we're business owners, just struggling to keep up and stay relevant. So that's what I think the last 2 years have brought for us.
Yeah, these are some big topics. And I think a lot of change. So if we focus to one of the big issues today is about recruitment, it's about finding people. So if we think about how we find people, the kind of, who we look for, what we look for, why we look for that, and the type of roles we're trying to hire for, how has this impacted us and how has this impacted the market?
Gosh, it's only like a topic we talk about five times a day. So let's talk first about the opinion, the opinions that we have. There's a lot of organizations out there that are really struggling between wanting to get back, you know, what they call reigniting a culture. And a big piece of that is that informal communication that happens in the office, getting tapped for stretch assignments, growth, learning. I had the benefit early in my career to just listen to the people around me that had been around doing it for so much longer and how much that accelerated my growth. And you don't get that at home. And so there's a lot of folks that are very passionate about bringing people back to the office. And there's a lot of workers, especially in some of the countries that haven't yet returned fully to the office. They don't want to leave their home. And actually, I remember what that felt like almost a year ago. I didn't want to leave home. I liked working in my slippers. In fact, I'm in my slippers now, right? I love it. Trying to balance the needs. And so we at Ingram MicroCloud have become really passionate about the hybrid approach. So we offer plenty of time where people can be at home, they can be in the cocoon, really able to focus without distraction, and have all of the creature comforts around them, but still come to work where they can get tapped for those learning experiences, the interaction, what we call the water cooler. I don't remember the last time I've ever seen a water cooler, but the water cooler conversations, right? But there are conversations that I have in the halls, and I appreciate them so much more now because they're a bit more of a novelty. So we have taken a hybrid approach. What I would tell you, coming back to your thoughts or your question on recruiting, is it's tough because some people only want fully remote and they pull themselves out of the process. And we're saying, you know, we don't want you in the office a ton, but we want you in the office a little, and taking a very balanced approach. But some people are still not there, Craig. And so we do lose about 20 to 25% of our candidates worldwide. And when people leave us, it's not as much for the money now. Sometimes when we're losing people, it's because they have a fully remote opportunity. The interesting thing is we've started to see some people boomerang back to us. They went fully remote, they left us, and 6 months later, they realized that they miss some of that connectivity, they miss the culture. In Spain, especially, this has happened. We've had a handful of people that have returned to us, and that's where I think everything will boomerang too. I think we need to get more flexible with regard to what we're looking for in the recruiting process, but so too, the candidates, our employees, will realize the value of that connection with their team in person.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And you really said two things I want to dig deeper on. You mentioned hybrid work, and you mentioned in the past there would be others who could help coach and mentor. So when I think of that today, companies are challenged with the same thing in the sense of there's potentially two, if not three generations in the workforce. And the views might be very different based on remote work, hybrid work in the office and how they approach. So what does this mean today when it comes to how do we approach multi-generations, multiple different needs and experiences and what people want out of their workforce?
Yeah, which is so incredibly important. I'll give an example of me personally where I was shocked about what younger generations wanted. So a younger member of my team started talking to the folks that were returning to the office, and we really wanted to start celebrating recognizing our employees, you know, whether that's birthdays, anniversaries. And she came back to me mm-hmm. and she says, they want birthday cakes. And I said, no, they don't. They can't. I've cut so many birthday cakes. I don't think anybody wants birthday cake. And she's like, they do. And they want balloons and anniversary cards. We've seen it in the movies, and it's not a social connection we've been able to have at work. And so that was the genuine ask. And so I found that fascinating. And that's just one example of we don't know what's important to the other generations. And that's a very superficial example, perhaps. But with regard to development opportunities and what they need and what they want, it is very different by generations. And we have such a wide swath of generations in the workplace that we need to have those venues where we could just talk to them and listen, ask those questions. And are we going to do that remotely? That's my question. Like, are we going to do that in a meaningful way remotely, or does that happen informally? And does that also happen perhaps formally, but when we're face to face and we can have just casual conversations? You don't have to worry about jumping in because you're cutting somebody else off digitally, right? Or raising your hand with the raise your hand buttons. Those are really great tools electronically, but do they provide really that casual, comfortable environment where people can really tell you what they want? So that's the first thing when we talk about generations, is that we shouldn't assume. And I learned that lesson on the regular, quite honestly, because after 25 years, I'm like, been there, done that. You know, here's what I think we need to do to move forward. And you're always in a rush, right? There's always 10 more things to do when you only had time for five. And so you're just looking to move fast. So, you know, that definitely is something that I think about, the generational piece.
I'm a big believer in that culture eat strategy for breakfast. And actually, Claire mentioned it earlier in the show. What's your take on this today in the workforce?
So it makes me think about, Craig, like, what is really culture? A lot of people have different definitions of it. I think about a company culture as how do people behave when no one's watching, right? You know, what really happens when it's not being supervised? Every company has a culture. It's just a matter of whether or not they've really thoughtfully cultivated the type of culture that they want. But like it or not, we have one. Could be great, could be not so great, maybe a work in progress. So when I think about culture, this is behavior, right? It's the behaviors of the whole organization, and that is execution, right? How do we get execution? It's the right behaviors. So strategy is a good plan. And that's, I don't want to say that's all it is, but it's because it's so necessary to have a good plan and to have direction. But when you give me that quote, I think of another, which is a B strategy executed well is way better than an A strategy that has no execution behind it, right? And so to me, it's, you know, good culture is really having the folks on board, aligned, really passionate about where the organization is going, such that you're harnessing that discretionary effort because everyone's on board. And so regardless of if it's an A, B, or perhaps even a C strategy, is that going to knock it out of the park every time if you have everyone aligned and moving in the right direction? I would say I totally agree.
Yeah, and we've talked a bit about what resonates is the human engagement, the interaction, the personal touch that you don't get with virtual. So how has this changed in how we onboard and engage with new talent? So when we talked about recruitment, what's really important things to think about in onboarding that associate into the company?
We bring out the best in people. We create the best culture. We create the best opportunity for retention when we are engaging. What do employees want? Employees really just want to know that their manager knows what they're looking for in their career, is interested in that, is helping connect them with their purpose in that, you know, how do I personally contribute to the greater good of what we're trying to achieve?
Hey, it's me again. Andrea just tapped into something crucial there, employee purpose. Increasingly, employees want their work to be meaningful. And if you can meet that, you'll improve retention, give employees more agency to make decisions, keep them motivated, and encourage them to work better as a team. Let's get back to Andrea.
like basic things employees are looking for, but we don't spend the time to have those really meaningful discussions. And I would say, to your point about virtual, we can do these things online, and we need to do these things in a digital way. We need to do better. So when I say we're missing out on people right now, we're missing out on those growth opportunities by not being in the office, Craig, I know we just need to figure that out. We have to, yeah. That's not an excuse of why they have to be in more, or at least it shouldn't be. We just have to do better, but there's not a lot of, there's a lot of work being done. Slowly best practices emerging. Like how do you do that? How do you create the equivalent digitally of what used to happen organically in the office? Because I think that that'll create even more flexibility, because I want employees not to have to be in the office once or twice a week. I eventually would love the option of they could come in once a month, and you know what? That's just as good, because we only just need to periodically touch base. But we're not there yet. I'm not comfortable with it, because I know we don't have these tools to substitute for those meaningful sorts of experiences yet. That being said, onboarding, we've come a long way. When did you ever think, Craig, that we'd be able to onboard employees fully remotely and do it well? When did you ever think that you'd have someone on your team that you wouldn't meet in person for 9 months? And yet we were. And leaders, we hired senior leaders that I didn't meet for one full year, and yet I'd worked with them intensively on really important things over that 1 year period of time. It just has required some creative thinking, but I mean, that whole piece has been transformational, because we just had to. There was no way not to. And now it's about challenging ourselves to recreate that for the development experience, for the engagement experience, which is harder because it doesn't feel like a have to. Coming back to the office now is an option. And so lo and behold, our level of transformation has slowed a bit. But I think we need to continue to push ourselves there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think I've been with the company now for 15 years, and I've been through purchases, reorgs, but nothing like this, to the point where, to your point, I have people on my team that have been on my team for almost 2 years now, and I haven't physically seen them yet. Yes. And that's odd. So it forces you to have a different engagement. And I always go back to something really authentic, really transparent, really honest, because you have to make the most of your digital engagements, which then changes when you see them live. It becomes a very different purposeful engagement in a very different collaborative way. So this is the point where we get really practical. These are great conversations, but what we want to do is say, at the end of the day, what are some tips and tricks that we can give? So I'm going to turn it over to you. So if you think about some practical applications of how to impact positively your culture and organization, if you can pick 3, 4, hopefully 5 things, maybe this week, to make people think differently about what they need to do internally to impact their own culture in a positive way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that question. And what I would challenge everyone to do, because I don't just want to provide some useful tips. What I would challenge everyone, if you're really passionate about culture and you want the best one possible, you want to engage, you want to retain. We're all worried about retaining our best employees at the moment. It's less about like what you're going to do this week, and it's more about what habits are you going to create. And I would tell you there's the biggest habit that I would encourage you to do, which is to make sure that you have regular scheduled time with each of your direct reports or your high potential talent to not talk about sales leads, to not talk about activity, transactions, sales volume, right? Like, There's plenty of opportunities to talk about that, but a one-on-one where they could count on it, they know when it is on their calendar, and you're actually asking, hey, what went well this last month? What could have gone better? What do you need from me? To talk about their development, where they're going, and you don't have to talk about their development all the time, but these are the questions. These are the questions that will keep them. These are the questions that will bring out the best in them, because that's how they know that their organization and their manager cares, right? And so if you're listening to this because you really, really care about the soft skills and the culture, nothing is more important than that regular connection and just asking those basic questions. And oh, by the way, because they get used to the conversation, they know they're going to have it. They know every month you're going to talk to them about what could have gone better. So, you know, when you're just really stressed about giving that constructive feedback, it takes away all that stress because you know every month you're going to talk about what went well and give them some recognition and what could have gone better. It takes all the surprise, all the stress out of that relationship, and they thrive. I've seen it over the years, and I would encourage everyone to think about doing that if it's not already a part of your normal routine.
That's some great advice. It's great. I'm taking mental notes in my head, like, hey, what am I not doing that I should be doing? So even though we talk about it all the time in our company. So thank you so much for today. It's been fantastic having this conversation. I think our listeners, hopefully you give them a different way to look at things and a different focus, because we don't do enough of this. It's usually pipeline. It's usually what's the next big deal? What's the next big strategy we have to go through? Not about what are we doing today to really change how people feel, engage, and react. Thank you. I want to thank both of you for your time today. As always, we like to have some fun at the end and insert some music. We ask all of our guests to pick a couple songs to add to our Spotify playlist. And so, Claire, let's begin with you. What are maybe two songs you want to add? Maybe one that's a favorite that's kind of on replay right now, and maybe a one guilty pleasure, something in the car, in the shower, we love to sing, but maybe you don't want everybody to know. What do you think?
Oh, I sing all the time, so unfortunately everybody knows. It's just really difficult for me. I love music. I love live music, especially, and going to festivals. But I have narrowed it down and picked two. So the first is by a band called Wet Leg, and it's entitled Chaise Longue. Now, you probably won't have heard of them yet, and I'm going to say the yet, right? I saw them last year play at the Isle of Wight Festival in the UK, and they performed on one of the smaller stages because they were unknown. But this year, let me tell you, they are everywhere. They've got a world tour. They're even supporting Florence and Machine as part of their tour. And Chaise Longue is tongue-in-cheek and dangerously catchy. So I hope you enjoy that one.
I'll look it up.
And then the second one, my not-so-guilty pleasure, is You'll Never Walk Alone by Jerry and the Pacemakers. Now, I nearly chose the Marcus Mumford version as an homage to Ted Lasso, the best show in the world. But Jerry is the classic version, and it's played and sung at every match of my beloved Liverpool Football Club. So that one has to be played loud and proud, and you have to sing along.
I love it. I love the connection there. Big fan of Ted Lasso, Mumford & Sons as well. So you nailed me on both sides there. Andrea, let's move on to you.
Okay, so this was an interesting thing to think about, and I'm really glad that you warned me in advance so that I could think about it. I mean, let's face it, there's decades of music now that I've loved over the years. But one of my all-time favorites is Don't You by Simple Minds. Ages me a bit, but every time I hear it, it just puts me back in a time and a place, and I always stop what I'm doing to listen to that song. I just love it so much. The guilty pleasure, well, I pretend not to like the music that my teenagers play, but I have to say the one that's on like a huge loop right now, The Motto, it's like a worm, and the beat is just in my head. And so I'm like constantly singing that, which, you know, they play it like every 7 minutes. So it's never long before I hear it next.
Hey, Andrew, those are great. And thanks you for those. Listen, it keeps us young. It's okay to listen to the music that our kids listen to, and it keeps us open to new opportunities. So listen, thank you both. I want to thank you for your selections. We'll continue to build this playlist over the course of the season. And you can find the link in the description of the podcast. I want to thank my guests, both Claire and Andrea, both having phenomenal insight and frankly some really transparent, authentic views on this, which I appreciate very much. I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us in this journey that we're going along and doing something different to try to shake things up and enjoying the podcast along the way. And I hope you join us next time on Kiss My Sass, the podcast for the modern MSP. Make sure you subscribe to the show for all the latest announcements and updates, and be sure to leave a comment and a review. Thanks, until next time. Thanks for listening to this episode of Kiss My Sass, the podcast for the modern MSP. From the smartest solvers to the most inspiring innovators, we're here to help MSPs rise with more innovation, more opportunity, and more success. So stay awesome, and we'll catch you next time. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, representing the views of the host and our guests, not the broader view of Ingram Micro Cloud. Information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. Thank you.